We're back on the air. This is Radio Entrepreneurs, and welcome to the Caravan for Entrepreneurship, which we are been doing for the last couple of months, traveling around to different facilities. And this week we're at the law firm of Tarlow, Breed, Hart and Rogers, just wonderfully located in the Prudential Center in Boston, Massachusetts. My co-host for this interview, our litigation and business reporter, Mark Furman. Welcome.
Jeffrey, great to be with you, and great to have you doing the show from our office.
You know, it's great having you as my sidekick, especially when we have attorneys on. I feel protected, and you're able to ask the questions I wouldn't even think of. Our next guest, Bob Hurwitz of Wayne, Richard, and Hurwitz, correct? And we're going to talk about construction law.
We are.
Something that I've had to learn a lot more about over the last year.
Any particular reason? Or
I have two large developer clients.
Okay.
So it's I didn't used to talk about developing a lot in the past, just with my wife, who's in the real estate land banking business, but now with clients too.
So great.
Everything's in a trend. So tell us a little bit about what's going on in construction law.
Well, what I do is basically, like you said, construction law. I represent a lot of building supply companies, like drywall suppliers, lumber yards, roofing supply companies. I also represent a lot of contractors, mostly subcontractors, tradespeople, roofers, ceiling installers in the commercial world. In construction, there's basically two types of construction. There's commercial and there's residential. And what I do is represent on larger projects the different tradespeople or the different suppliers. For example, building schools, police stations. Those are the public projects, and that's a whole different subset. And then there's also private projects, apartments, condominiums. And we represent the same thing, suppliers and contractors and those as well. And there's usually a distinction between public and private as a type of contracts that you enter into, the type of collection activity that you need to do if you don't get paid on a project. And then you have the residential construction, and that's, for example, on your home or a condominium. And there's different rules that apply to residential construction as opposed to commercial construction as well.
Can you give us some of the subtleties of the differences? And I would assume that, you know, doing something with schools and the police would be very different than an apartment building or condo.
Well, sure. What happens is when you're representing somebody on a construction project in the public sector, a lot of times the scope of the work comes up as a topic. Some of the contractors will say, that's not in my specifications. That's somebody else's work. The general contractor will say, no, that's yours, and there's usually a dispute over that. There's also disputes over change orders, extra work that the contractors perform. And those are usually the areas of dispute and, of course, payment. Sometimes payment isn't made when it's supposed to be made, and you have to pursue that as well. What happens in a public setting, unlike private, you can't lien a building, a public project. You can't lien a school, you can't lien a police station. But what you can do is make a claim on what's called a payment bond. And every construction project, large construction project that in the public world has a payment bond and performance bond to guarantee that all the contractors and suppliers that are working on the project get paid and that the work is performed properly. So that's the avenue that you would pursue if there was non-payment. You would go after the bond. On a private project, apartment buildings, or any kind of commercial building, you can put on what's called a mechanics lien. And that's a kind of a particular area of the law where if a contractor or supplier provides materials or labor and materials to a project and something happens and there's a dispute, and the general contractor, the owner, is not paying, then these contractors or suppliers can put on a mechanics lien on the property. And that basically secures your right to payment down the road after your dispute is resolved.
So when you have, there's also Is there a difference in the retainage that a contractor, percentage of the money that they've earned that they don't get between public and private jobs?
Well, it's interesting. There's a recent law, the retainage law, and it used to be that in private projects, a lot of times retainage, which is a portion of the money that's held back to make sure that the project gets completed by the contractor or the supplier, was a lot of times it would be 10% or whatever was negotiated. There's a recent law that went into effect for private projects that say that 5% retainage is the maximum that someone can hold back. So that makes it a lot easier on a smaller contractor who's relying on payment and, on the funds coming through at a timely basis. And then as far as payment, there's what's called a Prompt Payment Act, and that also helps smaller contractors get paid on a timely basis, make sure that their change orders get processed properly. And
what does that require?
Well, that's a law that if there's a change order, and without getting into the mechanics of it and the time frame, but the contractors have to come back on a change order in a certain time and say that it's accepted or rejected. And if it's not, and if they don't accept it or reject it, then it's deemed accepted, that type of thing. So then your change order will be approved.
How long has that been in effect?
Just a few years. And again,
that's designed to try to level the playing field between the contractor and the general contractor and the subcontractors?
That's exactly right.
Because the general contractors have most of the power in dealing with the subcontractors, right?
That's true. And another mechanism to level the playing field, again, are those mechanics liens, where during the course of a project, if there's a dispute that arises between a sub and the general, if a subcontractor or supplier puts a mechanics lien on the project, then a lot of times if there's financing that's due, like phase financing or construction financing, that brings a halt to the financing. So the bank may say, wait a minute, I'm not going to loan any more money for this project until you take care of that mechanics lien. So that levels the playing field for the sub or the supplier.
Is there any difference in the between the general contractor and the subcontractor that changes if it's a union shop or an open shop?
Not necessarily. As far as the mechanics liens or the payment bond claims go, there are prevailing wage issues, which is a whole different topic.
Right.
That's generally as far as security to make sure that you get paid for the work that you perform. That doesn't change. And then I was telling Mark earlier that there's a program. If we can switch to the residential section for a second,
please.
A lot of your listeners probably at some point in time have had got involved with a home construction project, whether it's a home remodeling, kitchen and bath remodeling, addition. And there's a program with the state Office of Consumer Affairs and Business Regulations runs a program called the Home Improvement Contractor Act. And what that is it allows a homeowner. And again, this is the smaller residential
this
project.
This is in Massachusetts.
In Massachusetts, yes.
Right.
And it's a mechanism for the homeowner and the contractor to basically resolve their disputes. If there's an issue that comes up on the project, whether it's a kitchen and bath remodeling, whether it's a $300,000 addition, anything, the program provides that you can have an arbitrator hear your dispute. And it's a very nominal cost to have this done. It's a very quick procedure. So if there's a dispute and the homeowner's having a problem with the contractor, the homeowner can either do it on their own or hire a lawyer if they wish. And they can file this demand for arbitration with the Home Improvement Contractor Program. And an arbitration will be set up. And it's very quick. And at the end of that, there's a decision that's made by an arbitrator, and that's binding on the homeowner or the contractor. And it's a great mechanism to, especially if you're a homeowner that you don't want to hire a lawyer, or if it's a smaller project, then you can get in and out quickly as far as a dispute over your house. And that's usually a pretty hot topic, because people get very passionate about their homes and very emotional. And this is something that it's a great program to have.
Very emotional.
Right.
Right.
And as a matter of fact, in addition to the work that I do, where I represent the different tradespeople, I'm also an arbitrator with the American Arbitration Association, and I'm an arbitrator with the Home Improvement Contractor Program as well. So not only have I prosecuted the cases and defended the cases, I've also decided the cases as an arbitrator. And it's a very interesting mechanism to help people. It's great.
It must be tough. You must get a lot of, I know just from people doing a lot of work in their homes, they tend to get very upset with their contractors. It's more it's more the rule than the exception.
I think you're correct. And especially sometimes you get problems where a contractor will come on the project, they'll pull out all the windows or knock out all the siding, and then they'll be gone, disappear. And it leaves people in quite a mess. And
can create new messes.
Exactly.
Right.
And I've seen that, when I'm arbitrating these things, it does get emotional, and tempers do seem to flare, and you just have to try to keep everybody on, on par and try to calm it down. But there are a lot of raised voices, let's say, during these arbitrations.
And there are insurance issues too, but we haven't gotten into that as well. That's a difficult road also.
Yes. Excuse me. If there is an issue, for example, if the contractor damages the property, the homeowner can always make a claim for the damages under their homeowner's policy. But as far as the actual work that's performed, the insurance won't cover that. What does exist is something called the Guarantee Fund, and that's through the Home Improvement Contractor Program as well. What happens there is if there's a decision that the contractor owes a certain amount of money to the homeowner, and the contractor either files bankruptcy, is out of business, disappears, there's a fund set aside to compensate the homeowner. It's a maximum of $10,000, but there is a fund so that if at the end of this arbitration process, if there's a decision and the contractor disappears, there is a way to get some compensation back.
Bob, if somebody wants to find you to discuss construction law from either side at Wayne Richard and Hurwitz, how would they find you?
They can call me 617-720-7870, or they can Google us at wrhmlaw.com.
Great. Well, thank you for being on the show today.
Thank you for
having
me.
Hopefully you'll come back again and talk to us some more about construction law.
It's a pleasure being here. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob.
Thanks, Mark.
That was Mark Furman. I want to thank Mark Furman, our host from the law firm of Tarlow, Breed, Hart & Rogers as well. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back after these messages with more stories of entrepreneurship in just a moment.